Next, I'd like to invite to present item two, Judge Michael Nash, Superior Court of California, County of Los Angeles, and Ms. Diane Nunn of the AOC Center for Families, Children, and the Courts. This is an action item for counsel. Welcome.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chief Justice Baxter, Judge Jarre, members of the council. I'm privileged and I'm excited to be here today to present this resolution on adoption and permanency month. I've got a lot of memories of being in this room as a member of the council, a member of the council's Blue Ribbon Commission on Children in Foster Care, and over 15 years as a member of the Family and Juvenile Advisory Committee. And I know the commitment that each of you gives to our judiciary as members of the council, and certainly know the hard work that it takes to be a member of the council, and I'm one of those that really appreciates and thanks you for that effort. Now, for those of you unfamiliar with our juvenile courts and its relation to our child welfare system, what I'd like to do for just a couple of minutes is give you a brief introduction on how and why we are here today for this item on our agenda. So let's just take a step back to 1980. At that time, Congress enacted the Adoption Assistance and Child Welfare Act, known as Public Law 96-272. The primary goals of that act were to prevent the unnecessary separation of children from their families, to improve the quality of care and services for vulnerable children and their families, and to ensure that children did not languish in foster care. What that act did was place major new responsibilities on the courts to oversee the child welfare system more vigorously than it had ever done so before. In 1997, Congress enacted the Adoption and Safe Families Act, known as ASFA, and that was adopted in part as a response to the fact that more children were entering the foster care system than were exiting it. ASFA firmly established safety, permanency, and well-being as the national goals for the child welfare system, and the act exerted more pressure on the courts to move cases more quickly to expedite permanency for children. Now, that has been followed by other legislative acts by Congress, including the Fostering Connections Act of 2008, and just 2 days ago, the House of Representatives reauthorized its program to provide tax and financial incentives to encourage adoption through the foster care system. Now, if we move to 1998, there, at that time in Los Angeles, in order to begin to clear up a growing backlog of adoptions, once again, as a reflection as to what was happening in the child welfare system, our court in Los Angeles partnered with some others to create a little program where we opened up our courts on Saturday to conduct adoption completion hearings. On that first day, in April 1958, we did 115 adoptions on a Saturday morning. It was really a big hit, and we began to do it again and again. And since 1998 in Los Angeles, on a few dozen Saturdays, we've completed well over 10,000 adoptions from our foster care system, and certainly we've completed more than 35,000 adoptions overall from foster care in Los Angeles, including a record 654 in one day. Chief Justice George was frequently talked about the experience that he had when he actually sat on Adoption Saturday and stole most of my calendar that day. And, Chief, there's an open invitation for you to come down anytime to sit and hear adoptions on Adoption. Actually, we do them on Fridays now because it's too expensive to open up the court on Saturday. But you're welcome in any event.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Now, other courts throughout our state and the country have followed our lead. For more than a dozen years, we have celebrated National Adoption Day on the week before Thanksgiving, where each year more than 200 courts and 200 jurisdictions in all 50 states opened their doors to complete adoption hearings to the tune of about 3,000 in one day every year. Now, in 1999, in recognition of the need for and in the enhanced work towards developing permanency in our system, our judicial council took the lead and began to declare November as Adoption and Permanency Month. Now, through this resolution, we recognize that all children born in creation need and deserve to grow up in safe, healthy, loving, and permanent homes. And also, through this resolution, we recognize that, really, permanency comes in a number of forms other than just traditional adoption. In particular, we understand that the most preferred and most prevalent form of permanency through our court system is through family reunification. In recent years, courts in this state and elsewhere have been holding family reunification celebrations to recognize those families who have successfully navigated the often complicated and frustrating child welfare system to overcome the difficulties that brought them into contact with the system in the first place, so that their children can safely return home permanently. So, recently in Los Angeles, just like we do on Adoption Day, we celebrated Family Reunification Day in our court, and what we did was we publicly held hearings to terminate jurisdiction for a number of those families. And it's possible in several months you'll see me here again before you asking for another resolution to really celebrate Family Reunification Month in a much more significant way than we do now. Now, what I'm going to do now is just step aside for a minute from my dear friend Diane Nunn, who many of you know. Diane, for a long time, has been my guardian angel. And, of course, you know, she is really one of the treasures, the California's treasures, when it comes to our juvenile and family courts. And as you know, she's the director of the Center for the Family, for Families, Children, and the Courts, which, if you don't know, CFC is the jewel of the AOC. It really is the nation's best model representing the state judiciary's commitment to serving families and children through our court system. And Diane will introduce some special guests here today who will represent three different forms of permanency created by our dependency courts. And actually, one of the lessons to be learned from this is that kids are kids, and they all need safe, healthy, loving, permanent homes, no matter which door they come into our court system from. So after Diane introduces our special guest, then we'll ask the council to once again adopt this year's resolution.
Thank you. I'd first like to introduce Ms. Marcy Daniluke. Ms. Daniluke is a mentor parent in the Santa Clara Dependency Advocacy Center.
Hi, good afternoon. Welcome. So my name is Marcy Daniluke, mentor parent. I'm going to give you a little bit of a Reader's Digest version of how I got there. So at the age of 5, I became a ward of the court in Santa Clara County. My father was in prison, and my mother was very abusive. My mother was born in Vietnam, so the tradition that she carried over here of discipline was actually corporal punishment. So you can see why I was a ward of the court. I was shuffled around to different foster homes, and I did not learn how to become a parent. I didn't have the skills. I didn't know what love was, because, again, my parents weren't in the picture. So I tried to experiment with, obviously, drugs and alcohol, and I tried to find those skills on the streets with friends. And I remember being in the children's shelter my 16th birthday. I had made, like, a two-year stretch there once. I stayed there for that long. Nobody wanted to deal with a teenager. I wasn't adoptable. And I remember telling myself, I'm going to be a mom one day. And when I'm a mom, I'm going to make sure my kids are never going to end up in the court system. So lo and behold, age 21, give birth to my 11-year-old. She's 11 now. And 15 months later, I gave birth to a son. Because of my drug and alcohol addiction, I was also in a domestic violence relationship with the father, very severe. I would leave, go back, leave, go back to him, because I didn't have a place to live. I didn't have any financial support. I didn't know who I was, so I continued using, and I was like 90 pounds. I would sit on a toilet, and I couldn't even cover the seat. I had a rubber band tied against my underwear, my sweats, to hold it up. I was dying in the inside, and I had no idea how to climb out. So, failure to protect. Good thing I wasn't charged with that, because I kept going back to the father. Santa Clara County removed my children, and I do not regret it at all, one bit, because that is the time that I got to learn how to be a parent. I did a case plan. I navigated, you know, did drug testing, everything. Any suggestions that were given to me, I took. I wanted a different way of life, and because I felt that the system failed me as a child, I was not going to allow the system to fail me as an adult. And I can say today that the system did not fail me as an adult. When I turned 18, though, let me back up, nobody came looking for me. I emancipated myself. I ran away a lot, and no one came looking for me. So as soon as I turned 18, I was like, okay, bye. And I look back on it now, and having my children removed and going through the case plan. At the time my children were removed, my daughter was 15 months old and my son was 3 months old. I did everything to the best of my ability. I strived for perfection, even though I know that that does not exist. And when the courts, I had Judge Edwards as my judge. I'm not sure if any of you guys know him, by the way. I always have to throw his name out. And he's amazing. He saw something in me. And when I went to residential treatment, and it was for 30 days in Mariposa, that's in Santa Clara County, he said, okay, Marcy, are you ready to go on to your THU, your transitional house? And I said, no, I'm not ready. In 30 days, I'm barely getting to know who I am today. I used the half my child and adult years. There was no way I knew who I was. So I stayed 3 more months. Total of 3 months. Left there, went to a THU for a year. I learned so much about myself, what I was willing to take on, what I was able to take on, what I couldn't. I got to know who I was. And for the first time, I can look at people eye level. Like right now, looking at you, I can look at you straight in your eyes, in your face. 10 years ago, I could not do that. I couldn't talk about my story without crying. Today I use it as a therapeutic skill. And so here's the good part. I learned so much about myself, and I learned that it takes a village to raise a child. I was able to express my concerns, my fears with my attorney, my social worker, with everyone. And I said, you know, my son, he's 2 now, and he was in this foster home since he was 3 months. He's calling them mom and dad. And my daughter knew exactly who I was. We had that bond, you know, but I had to make one of the most selfless decisions of my entire life. And I had to express and throw out there, taking that chance that the DFCS, Department of Children's Services, wouldn't, I had that fear that they weren't going to let me have my daughter in my care. I took the chance anyways, and I said, you know, I don't know if I can take care of my son too. You know, I can have as many kids as I want, but whether I can take care of them financially and emotionally, that's completely different. And he was already calling them mom and dad, and so I asked that my son stay in his placement and to be adopted. And it was the best decision ever. You know, I'm able to care for my daughter and give her what she needs, and my son's needs are being met. They live 15 minutes away from me. You know, when holidays come up and they call, or during the, I jump. And my kids, I have another one that I had in my recovery, another son, which I felt was kind of a redo, you know. They're never going to know who I was in my addiction. So today, I don't give myself fronts, but March 11th, I'll have 10 years, you know, being in recovery, which is a huge deal for me. I couldn't get a day, you know, and I have the job that I have today working in Dependency Advocacy Center in Santa Clara County, being a mentor parent. I'll be a mentor parent almost 7 years in February. Being able to help guide and help these mothers navigate the court system and to show them that we do recover as parents. We have this, there's a stigmatism that's on us and that people look at us like we don't love our kids or we don't care about them. That's not it. We come from different backgrounds. We're conditioned to be a certain way. And we just need someone to love us, to show us different skills. And I love being a mentor parent today. And I get to come and speak with everybody here and be having these invitations. And I'm truly blessed and honored. You know, I get to go out to Elmwood in Santa Clara County, which is really nice to be on the other side, walking in and, you know, and just latching on to the mom I'm working with and saying, hey, I'm with you the whole step of the way. And we're going to, you know, whatever treatment facility you're in, I'm going to be there. When you have court, I'm going to be there. You have questions, I got answers. If I don't have an answer, I will find you an answer. I do not give legal advice, by the way. I'm only a mentor parent. It keeps me on track. It helps me remind myself where I came from and where I don't want to be anymore. So I will not take up any more of your time. I appreciate it. Thank you.
I would now like to introduce Dwayne and Marianne McGinnis with their two children, Wamish and Autumn.
Good afternoon. My name is Marianne McGinnis. My husband, Dwayne McGinnis, and I had a wonderful... I'm going to have to be careful because I was told not to cry. We have been so honored to be asked to come up here. In 2006, I started working at Warner Elementary School. It was a small school that went from preschool through high school, less than 300 students in the entire school. I taught first grade there. I got to know Wanish and Autumn in the preschool, so I spend most of my lunch hour in the preschool hanging out with the preschoolers because it was fun, and just fell in love with all the kids. Found out that Wanish and Autumn were being fostered, and I thought, oh, that's pretty cool, you know, and see how they're doing and all. And in 2008, I happened to be at the school during the summer fixing my classroom up for the school year and got called from across the street at the community center saying that they were going to be having an Indian rural health meeting and would I be interested. And I said, absolutely, because my passion was to find out how I could be a better teacher for the Native community, how I could... I would go on the buses with the kids, with the bus drivers before school, after school, just to see where the kids lived, just to see where the kids that I was working with lived. And it was not all Native kids that were economically disadvantaged. There were Hispanic. I mean, we had a whole large group of kids. But in 2008, I went over to the Indian Rural Health meeting, and they started talking about these two little children who were 3.5 and 4.5 who had been taken out of their foster home. One child was separated from their sibling because there had been some emotional problems. And they were supposed to be adopted, and the adoption fell through. And I raised my hand. I said, would that be Wanishan Tortoise? And they said, how do you know these children? I said, well, I've taught half their cousins in their class, but I've known them because I work with the preschool, I work with the teachers and everything like that. And they said that they were looking for foster parents. Meanwhile, we also had three children who were grown, married, and two grandchildren, another one on the way. And we kind of looked at each other going, okay, I think this is what we are supposed to be doing. So I called the social worker at the time, Katya Hansen, who we still stay in contact with. Saw her this summer, took the kids down to the beach to see her, and it was a great reunion, and said, yeah, we'll go ahead and do this. Within a month, we had both kids with us. We had the IEPs going for Wanish, for speech, for Autumn for speech, and for other issues. And in 2008, we brought them home and started our adventure. Darla Schmidt, who was our mentor through Indian Health, passed away last year, was with us the entire walk. We've stayed in contact with the family, the tribes. We asked when we were considered for adopting. We asked, could we make sure that they keep their cultural heritage, their names, but go ahead and hyphenate it so they are truly part of two families. And our families have bonded together. We see their mom a lot. We go to the reservation a lot. And in 2009, there was a decision that was being made to send one of my children to Ramona for special ed. And I and the preschool teacher both said, absolutely not. I resigned and brought our kids to the school district that we live in, and has been unbelievable. They've gotten all the help they needed. The person that was going to send them to Ramona is no longer in charge of the school, and so I feel justice has been done. I think our most wonderful experience is the fact that we've been able to maintain a relationship with the tribe, with their cousins, with their mother. We did have a short relationship with their father when we would see him down at Indian Health, because they started at Indian Health in Rincon. We continue to take them to Indian Health to see their doctors, their dentists, their healthcare people, because they know them. Wanish was born at 30 and a half weeks, spent 2 months in NICU. Autumn was born 29 weeks on the res, and the doctors know them, and they know what their needs are. I don't trust anybody else. We go to cultural events. We make sure that they have had experiences with powwows, with cultural events on the reservation. We go up and see their aunts and uncles and mother on a regular basis. They come to our house. We've gone to the 4th of July with cousins. And Wanish and Autumn, you know, I am so blessed to have been able to be part of this whole transition of tribal customary adoption, because we were ready to just keep them as foster children until they turned 18. And when Karen Kolb and Darla came to me and said, we're working on tribal customary adoption, are you interested? I said, absolutely. No questions asked. You know, I mean, Wanish may have to help me up to the, you know, podium when he graduates, but but we have been so blessed and so educated to be able to be part of this whole process and this procession. And I don't know if the kids want to speak, but I just want to... Lala. On top of everything else, they have a little sister who was 13 months at the time that they were looking at getting her into another foster home, because their foster home wasn't working. I was working full-time. Dwayne was looking for a job. We really struggled with this, and we talked it over with our son and daughter-in-law, and we said, I don't know how we're going to do this, but will you help us, you know, if we need help or whatever? And Ian and Kristen, our son and daughter-in-law, said, we'll take her. So they went through the same process as we did. They lived just about 20 minutes from us, and so we were able to spend many, many times with them back and forth at the home, at each other's homes. We all got adopted on the same day, and it's been a blessing, I mean, for everybody. Ian was given an opportunity that he could not refuse a year ago to move to Texas, and he is now captain of the chemical firefighting plant at Valero. They live on 5 acres of land. The kids are being homeschooled by Kristen, who is an amazing, amazing young woman, and mother, daughter, wife, everything. They come up every 3 months. We come and see them. We are planning a trip to meet them halfway in the fall so that we can be together again. We had an overnighter with Talisa, coming to spend the night with her brother and sister, and they write back and forth. We talk back and forth. It's just, you know, it just is the most amazing journey I have been on in my entire life, even with my own biological children. These little guys have just done everything for me and made me a better person for that. And let's see if they want to say anything.
My name is Autumn, and the reason why I'm named Autumn is because I was born in the fall.
She's going to have a birthday on November 2nd. I would like to just interject for those of you that are not familiar with tribal customary adoptions that in 2010, the California legislature enacted the law so that children who are in the state juvenile court, this provides another option for permanence. You do not need to terminate it. Obviously, there has to be agreement with the tribe, but you do not need to terminate the biological parents' rights, but still can go forward with an adoption. So it's, and if we think you are the very first families,
yes,
correct?
Yes.
Under
we
California.
Were the first families in San
yes.
Diego County.
California.
California. California. Wanish doesn't want to speak all of a sudden, but his name actually means hunter in the Kuya language, and his aunt and uncle are his aunt and uncle beaded and presented him for his 10th birthday an eagle feather, and that is now framed in his room. And his name means hunter, and his uncle is going to take them out to the res to do hunting with bows and arrows, and also getting Wanish into bird singing, because he has a beautiful voice and should be heard, and he can tell his story through the Kuya language that way and learn his culture. And Autumn is, we have a dear friend, Sonia Flores, who is an international dancer from the Pollock tribe, and we have taken lessons from her. She said after the fall she could go ahead and take the kids back and teach them cultural dancing again. So that's where we lie with our beliefs and make sure that they know who they are and what their history is.
Thank you. Our last guest, I'd like to invite Sherry Watkins with her soon-to-be adopted son Stephen, and also Lisa Campbell Motten and Kendra Hamilton, and I apologize if I mispronounced names, from the LA County Probation Department.
I am Sherry Watkins, and this is Stephen, who will soon be my son. And he is a distant relative of mine, and that's how I got involved when He was in, or he is in probation. And this is where I'm going to turn it over to them.
Well, first of all, I'm just going to back up a little bit to introduce them. And then Kendra Hamilton behind me is the person who's really orchestrated this adoption. But I first want to say I was nervous that we'd have to go after this awesome family. So I'm a little choked up and teary-eyed. But today is an honor. It feels like a dream for Kendra and I, and maybe even Judge Nash, that we'd actually be standing before you speaking about adoption and delinquency court for probation youth. It's absolutely incredible where we've come in the last 10 years. We started off with probation youth were never even considered to be adoptable or that anyone would even care about them enough. And we've gone from that to today we're on, Stephen will be our eighth adoption in the nation that we know of. California, as far as we know, and we're trying to search around so we're not lying to anybody, but we think that California is the only state in the nation that is doing adoption and delinquency court. So it started about 10 years ago when my unit was established for Los Angeles County as quality assurance to address a corrective action plan for the state. And at that time when we started to do quality assurance and case planning and improving, we found out we had to do adoptions. And so probation officers at that time were adoption, you know, for criminals, you know. And so we had a whole mind shift where they were even joking about, oh, yeah, we'll put bumper stickers on cars that say adopt a criminal, you know. And so it was a joke then, and it's not a joke anymore. It's actually reality. And we are, I can't even tell you, honored and blessed beyond belief that we would be here today talking to you and telling you that no longer is it a fantasy or a joke, but probation youth are very much the same as our youth in dependency. They've just made a mistake, and they're the same. They deserve the same love. They deserve the same families. As Judge Nash shared, every child, regardless where they made a mistake or not, deserves to grow up in a family with people that love them. And so we didn't know how to do it, and we just took a case and said, let's just move forward. At that time, our partnership with our child welfare wasn't as strong. It was kind of like probation stays in their lane, we stay in ours, and let's just keep moving down this freeway. Today, we have a committee that comes together with all of our agencies. It's a collaborative effort, and because of that committee that includes County Council, Alliance, DCFS, and probation, we're now working on our eighth adoption. And so also our last adoption, which was the seventh, they are now going to be the spokespeople, spokesfamily for delinquent families in the whole nation. They are going to be the spokespeople for adopt U.S. kids, and so you'll probably be hearing about them and seeing them. And so when we took that first case and just said, let's just go for it, and then people will tell us, you're making mistakes, you can't do that, that's when Judge Nash, we came to him and said, okay, we're here, we're ready, we have this case, what do we do? And he was able to then forge a system in delinquency court, and now other counties have patterned themselves after us, and so we have, this will be the fourth adoption of four other counties have completed adoptions as well, and so it's just spreading, the word spreading, we're all reaching out to each other, can I borrow your report, how do we do this, and they're also forging collaborative committees in their counties to do the same thing. So I'm going to turn this over to Kendra so she can introduce the family.
Hello, everyone. My name is Kendra Hamilton. I'm the supervisor over Lisa Campbell's unit, which is the Placement Permanency Quality Assurance Unit in L.A. County Probation. This here is Stephen Colburn. Would you like to say hi?
Hi.
Hi. I've been assisting Stephen with permanency, dealing with his adoption case for some years now. Originally, the case belonged to a former probation officer. And once I received the case, it was pretty much I got it in the middle, trying to research, find out what was going on with the case. And in the beginning, we couldn't find anyone. We were doing family finding, trying to locate a family for Stephen, because Stephen made it clear to us that he wanted a family and he wanted to be adopted. So what happened was it got to the point where Lisa and I said, we need to get this case out in the media. So he became our first media adoption-based recruitment case. We have calendars. We're really proud to say that we did find a few families, but Stephen, in the middle of it, became a little intimidated and said, you know what, I'm not ready. So our whole focus was not to force him. So we kind of stepped back a little bit, let him regroup, make sure that this is what he wanted, because we didn't want to force this on him. And we were so lucky that Sherry Watkins stepped up. She already introduced herself. She stepped up and said that she wanted to be a family, to love Stephen as her own son. So I'm honored. Lisa is honored. This whole collaboration, this was not done alone. We had a lot of work. A lot of people were involved in this successful adoption. So the adoption actually is actually scheduled to be next month on November 7th. But we're happy to say that we are so honored and happy to actually give Stephen what he wanted for so many years, which is a family. And Sherry Watkins, by far, we are so grateful that you stepped up to the plate to love and care for Stephen. In spite of whatever decisions he made, he is deserving of a family. So thank you.
So for, I guess, is the 15th time, I would ask the Judicial Council to adopt this resolution and to proclaim this November, as Court Adoption and Permanency Month, during which the courts and their communities are encouraged to join in activities to promote permanency. Thank you.
This so is moved. Really a tough
Commissioner
call.
Alexander moves.
Second.
Okay, seconded by Judge Jackson, Judge Ellsworth, Judge McCabe. I thought I heard Justice Miller, and I saw Judge Stout moving for the microphone as well. All in favor of this wonderful resolution, please say aye.
Aye.
Matter passes. But before we do, I want to say several thank yous to you. I want to thank you for bringing us the blessings and family, amazing journeys of these families, Judge Nash and Diane, thanking Marcy and Mr. and Mrs. Duane and Marianne McGinnis and Juanish and Autumn, as well as the fine work of Kendra Hamilton, Lisa Campbell, and also to Sherry Watkins and Stephen Colburn. But I also want to say that Judge Nash tried to get away from you by just giving you 7 seconds of all that he has done for California and the community. And I want to say, Judge Nash, that all of us here thank you for your presentation. I also thank you for your many years of judicial service and leadership at the local, state, and national level. I'm pleased to note that Judge Nash is the longest-serving presiding juvenile court judge in Los Angeles Superior Court history, now in your 18th year in that role. He's been active. He mentioned that already that he's been active at the state level as a member of the Judicial Council, understanding the work here. But he's also a member and co-chair of the Council's Family and Juvenile Law Advisory Committee, chair of the Juvenile Court Judges of California, and a current member of both the California Blue Ribbon Commission on Children in Foster Care and the California Child Welfare Council. And at the national level, yes, the national level, Judge Nash is the immediate past president of the National Council of Juvenile and Family Court Judges and a fellow of the National Center for Juvenile Justice. California is lucky to have Judge Nash dedicate his professional career to the children and families of California. I also had the pleasure to tour the Edelman Children's Court, Judge Nash as my leader, on that recent visit to the L.A. courts. And that children's court serves as a model for providing extremely child-sensitive forum for addressing the issues and challenges of families in California. Thank you, Judge Nash.
Chief, do we have time to have the families stand
yes.
with you? And we've got the resolution for you.
Wonderful. Why doesn't everyone come up?